Are we recording?
Oh, we are finally recording. This is a Stunt Granny presents OPA number 89. Finally. We're there. And this is Kevin DeFrango. Beside me, Ken Phillips. What is happening, good sir?
Not much, man. We're back together again at Opa Studios North. Settled into a little bit of a cool, crisp fall evening here, finally. We're getting a little fall weather.
Well, it's only gonna last like a couple. It's only gonna last a couple of days, the cooler weather here. So that is still pretty wacky, wild stuff, as far as I'm concerned, considering that we're almost in October. My hockey season is ready
Yeah, it was
in a
the
couple of days.
we had a few days where it was in at touching the 90 mark, I think, this past week. So
Yeah.
that was unexpected for fall, I must say.
Yep.
Considering they barely hit 90 all summer, which was strange to throw it in there at the end.
Last gasp.
Just trying to screw with us. Mother Nature really likes to screw with you when you live here in Ohio, I gotta say. But
Yep.
we signed up for it. We can't complain.
Yep. We wouldn't have a name for this podcast if we didn't tolerate the weather in Ohio and or Pennsylvania. So,
Yeah, we would have to come up with a totally different name. So we're not willing to do that.
yep, we don't need to add an NC onto the end of this or an IA,
An MI.
MI. Don't need that TX. Don't need that.
WV. No.
Definitely not WV. But I was actually naming states that other stunt granny contributors are in.
Oh, I was just going with other neighboring states, I guess, just to
Yeah, well, one of them is in MI there, so yeah, they don't just have the same ring as OPA.
No. MIPA? I don't know.
It does
That could
remind me of
work.
Meepos for some reason from Perfect Strangers, where Balky Bartokomous was from.
Yeah, I remember that you were into that show, but for some reason I never watched it as much. But that would be interesting to go back to and see how well it holds up to these days, I guess.
Because what was,
Was that with Tom
oh,
Hanks?
he actually, Stunt Granny member Chris there was saying that Wings does not hold up.
Oh.
I have not gone back to watch that,
I watched that at some point when it was in syndication. I thought it was kind of funny. So, I'm not sure I will go back to watch that one again, but that'll be one to look out for, I guess, if it comes up.
yeah, so that topic just made me think about
Well, that was just a little bonus topic there for our listeners. Not even
it.
planned.
They wouldn't even know it. We're so good.
Yeah, our listeners would not know it, but we do plan our episodes. Believe it or not, we have certain topics to discuss each week, or each show at least. And
This is definitely one of the weirder ones.
yeah, this was strange. I don't know if anybody.
It is certifiably strange, since it is still a mystery as to what exactly is occurring.
And honest to God, the mystery. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've recently opened up more relations with Cuba under the last year of President Obama, I believe. We now have some like diplomats and things in our embassy down there. But they say that recently there's been a strange problem and being experienced by the ambassadors that they've been getting like sick and I guess having like hearing loss.
Yeah, and it's happened to a number of people, the majority of which are American.
Yes, it seems like they're connected to the embassy somehow.
Yeah, 'cause it's not like there was one Canada problem or something like that, but not like a string of them, like what's happening with the U.S.
Right. And this article in particular is pointing out the fact that Raul Castro, the leader of that country, seemed to be rattled by whatever is happening, as if he is not in control of it and is also freaked out.
Citing him freaking out is also the fact that he allowed the FBI into Cuba to check things out.
Yeah, that seems weird.
You know,
usually other countries aren't like inviting the FBI to come in and just investigate.
Take a look around.
Yeah.
Yeah, that usually isn't a friendly situation. So, yeah, I mean, if he's inviting them down, I would have to say that that would be in good faith.
Yeah. So what is happening here? I don't know. It could be, I guess, forces within the Castro, or not Castro, but within the Cuban government, or people, I suppose, who are anti-U.S., maybe hardliners. But it almost seems like it's some kind of like a sci-fi weapon that is like using sound waves somehow to cause damage. So that does make you wonder what that could be all about.
Yeah, it seems like some pretty high-tech stuff, although it would be pretty interesting if it ends up being some low-tech stuff.
It's just someone holding a boombox up outside their window.
The rest of the neighborhood doesn't hear it because it's just concentrated on them.
Yeah, it's just Nickelback on repeat, and it's just like crashing these people's souls. No, I don't know. It's I think we've talked about like the idea of using sound as like a non-lethal kind of weapon, and
yeah, I do believe we've broached that subject for some weird reason.
Yeah. So this could be, I suppose, a usage of that sort of thing, and maybe using frequencies which are sort of outside normal hearing, possibly even.
Right.
Because it seems like people would experience hearing like strange noises, but then like it would be like localized to a room. Like if they left, they wouldn't hear it anymore.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't like, it always happened in the apartment, but it wasn't, it wasn't a consistent location, I guess it would seem.
So that could be
described. It
that would seem to be like consistent with the idea of having a some type of weapon that you can target at different areas, like some kind of sonic weapon, I guess, if that's indeed what happened. But I guess it's strange. I mean, it seems like this person lost their hearing, right? Not sure if they're going to get it back.
Yeah, potential sonic induced injuries.
Which is like a weird sentence, I think. Sonic-induced injuries. Like, you don't normally think about that, I guess, from listening to like loud music for too often, maybe. But
yeah, but I wouldn't really call that
a sonic weapon.
A sonic-induced injury. Like, that seems like a little... you could describe it that way, but I mean, I think that you're really kind of hyping it up if you describe it that way.
You wouldn't say that a Walkman is a sonic weapon,
yeah,
in your book.
You have tinnitus from wearing headphones too much.
Although, if you remember that scene in Back to the Future when Marty McFly snuck into his father's bedroom and hooked up the Walkman to his ears to play that hard rock and roll music there to freak him out and pretend to be an alien from outer space. Oh. That kind of was a sonic weapon in a way. So I don't know. There's kind of a gray area even there, I think.
Okay. Yep. Of course you'd come up with that location.
I always have to be a little contrarian, you know. There's a little contrarian spirit that has to come through. But Yeah, this was kind of creepy. Like, it makes you wonder. Sometimes I feel like I hear a strange noise. It turns out to be the refrigerator, I would say 9 times out of 10. But it's creepy to think about somebody being able to kind of be across the street and just aiming some kind of, sound weapon at you without you necessarily even knowing what's going on.
Yeah, and I mean, it causes real maladies for these people.
Right. Beyond the Nickelback boombox scenario that we were discussing.
Yeah, that would be bad, but it wouldn't be terrible.
Yes. People having permanent damage afterwards, no good. I would say that, it's just I think that they could have, sound that is below human hearing that would still, really mess with, your nervous system and stuff, potentially. Just another thing to be worried about, I guess, in the world, Kevin. In case people were out there without stress or anxiety, we wanted to be able to give you something to worry about. Kevin, you were about to say something, I think.
Well, I'm just fine that I'm not living in Cuba.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I'm not a U.S. diplomat in Cuba.
Yeah. You're not a U.S. diplomat or Elian Gonzalez either. I wonder what he's up to these days.
It would take a lot of work to get myself to be that level. Well, maybe not.
Yeah, I don't know. Being a diplomat to Cuba, you would be taking risks. Like, that's not like the cushy job like ambassador to Ireland or something. You know?
to a super friendly country.
Right. There's probably not as many people aiming sonic weapons at you in Ireland, I don't think. I mean, I guess I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't speak so cavalierly. Some of our listeners out there, if you're in Ireland, would you say that sonic weapons are common in your part of the world? Just let us know.
Drop a line.
Yes.
At StuntGranny on Twitter.
At Gozer33, of course.
At DeFrango11, if you want to come this way. So, hit us up.
That's right. We'd like to be informed and not just make rash generalizations here. So we would love to know if that is a common common weapon where you live.
Thanks in advance.
Yes. did you have anything else that you wanted to get in?
No, but they did say that a number of Canadians have gotten hit recently, too.
Yeah.
It's just in the Mount. I always love when the Mounties are involved.
Mm-hmm.
Because I always think about the wrestling Mountie.
I always think about the one that was on that cartoon show with Rocky and Bullwinkle. Dudley Do-Right.
Dudley Do-Right. Yes. Yeah.
That's where my mind goes, but I could see the wrestling angle there as well, for sure. It doesn't seem like they should be a real thing, but that is actually, they are actually law enforcement officers.
Yeah, they're to be taken seriously.
Mm-hmm. They can arrest you.
So.
Do not taunt the Mounties.
I would not think that the government of Cuba would be at fault if they have both the Mounties and the FBI in the country trying to figure this thing out.
Yeah, I guess it's still not comforting to think that...
That'd be a dumb plan, but...
Yeah, but it's not great to think that there's kind of like... There could be these, wild elements down there... ...that are causing trouble without the government's involvement, really. Like, that's still not great.
No.
Because they are, I believe, 90 miles from Miami, roundabouts?
I think it's something in that that vicinity.
Pretty close to the U.S.
Right.
So, something to keep an eye and or an ear out for, dare I say.
Oh.
Oh, boy.
Hey.
Speaking of ears, Kevin, some people had said have an ear for language. Are able to learn new languages very easily. I'm not sure that'll qualify for myself.
My German has definitely gone unused for a remarkably long amount of time. I don't even think that KMFDM does enough speaking German to try and keep it fresh in my mind.
Yeah, I did learn some Spanish in college, which I enjoyed. I think it was an interesting experience to kind of learn something about other languages, kind of in a way to be able to contrast with your own and to see what is different and what's similar. And this why this article was interesting to me, really, is that it's comparing the different languages in ways of complexity or I guess efficiency, you could say.
Well, and that was something to me that was a little bit like the article was interesting, but I felt like the headline was a little misleading. Because I didn't feel like they really tried to get down to these are the most efficient languages. But they did kind of describe some very efficient languages that use a few words.
Well, let's, you know, I think people might be familiar, especially if they've taken, like you say, German or Spanish or French. Those languages have, like, gendered nouns and article. Well, we have gendered pronouns here, but gendered articles.
Yes.
So, like, the would be different if you're talking about a man or a woman.
Yeah, there's der or die, the choices that they mentioned from German, because they use a German phrase to kind of break down how vocabulary works between different languages.
Right. So, you know, in that way, I guess German is a little more complicated than English because we don't have those gendered nouns, but there's other languages that I think would be more simple, like I want to say Chinese, but I know that's Mandarin is what I'm trying to say.
Oh yeah.
That's by contrast, I guess on the simple side of, in terms of using language constructs, like it's basically just noun, verb, you know, subject maybe, the sentence structure is.
Yeah, there's no. They don't have a gender set of variables either, much like the English language. So yeah, there's some weird factoids in this Atlantic article.
Yeah, it's so like it seems like it's more like. I'm trying to see if there's an example. Oh, well, the counter example, I guess, from Mandarin would be this language from the Caucasus region. The Caucasus, yes.
Yes, the Caucasus Mountains in Russia.
So they say that their language has a lot of these markers in it. So, for example, the sentence, "The men saw me," just the word for saw is a god-awful looking long word that's pronounced sukalagahesh, and that means saw in that sentence.
I think you can, if you're going for efficiency, that is not not efficiency.
Right, but that verb contains along with it, just beyond like the idea of seeing, there's a part that says that it's me who was seen in that sentence, even though that does say me somewhere else in the sentence. Then there's other parts that say that the seeing was most significant to me rather than to the men or anyone else, that the seeing was done by more than one person, despite the sentence spelling out elsewhere that it was plural men who did the seeing, and that this event did not happen in the present. That on top of this, the event happened specifically in the past rather than the future. And finally, a bit indicating that the speaker really means what he's saying. So, like, all of that is, like, different suffixes or endings or a different verb form that goes into saying this word. So, like, where we have, like, past, present tense, like, there's all these different kinds of tenses that goes into this language.
Right.
The spoken in the Caucasus. But to the people who speak it, it doesn't seem that strange.
Oh, no. No one finds their own language strange at all. I was...
But this would drive you nuts to try to learn it, I think, which is...
It would be complicated.
And that is...
Obviously.
That is the other part that I thought was interesting. They say that the common theme here is that languages where adults have to learn it are simpler. So that means, like, languages where, oh, if people are conquered, like, it's an empire that spreads this language.
Oh.
Like in, like, the example of China.
Right.
So that could be, that explains why their language is so much simpler, because adults had to be taught it, basically, or learn to speak it acceptably, you know? So maybe the rules were lax more, because people kind of had to, you know, fuddle through a little bit with some of the syntax, you know? Like, couldn't pick up on all the subtleties.
Right.
But this region in the Caucasus, where these people live, you know, I'm guessing more
remote.
Isolated. Yeah. And so the people just grow up learning it and don't think it's odd, like you say. And for whatever reason, you know, children's brains are able to learn languages very well. So,
yeah. And I mean, I guess I remember hearing that a long time ago. Then I was just kind of annoyed as soon as I learned that fact. It's just like, well, then why didn't we learn this in, like, grade school? Like, that would have been a hell of a lot easier then. But of course, they probably didn't know that it was better to learn at a young age until we were older, so.
Yeah, I know that they do languages in grade school now. I'm not sure how intense it is. But I imagine if you had, like, whole classes in a language other than English, I don't know how much it takes for kids to be able to pick up on it. Like, does it have to be spoken in the household for kids to learn it?
Oh, right.
But I feel like, you know, like, children of, say, immigrants who come here end up picking up English pretty well from just being around other kids speaking English, I think.
At least. Yeah, I'm not sure if our esteemed roommate ever took any classes, but he speaks perfectly fine English.
There you go.
So, you know, because I know he came over here at an older age, so, you know, it wasn't his, like, it was his early to, or, like, mid-20s, probably.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, and that was an interesting way to look at language, I think, and, you know, how languages can change over time and why they would change, and it's kind of like, has some history built into it there too.
Oh, right.
So, I don't know. It's just an interesting little way of thinking about things to me.
Yeah, it was, like I said, it was really kind of fascinating. Like, the different menagerie of language in and of itself is always kind of interesting. Just because they talked about how the Vikings kind of took their language and turned it into the Old English style.
Oh, right. So that, like, is when English really changed from Old English to Middle English because basically the Vikings.
Yeah. Blame the Vikings. yeah. So,
and that could be why English has more of a simple syntax in that way. Like, we don't have gender, for instance, or a lot of these subtle, you know, verb tenses and things like that.
Yeah, and it is somewhat similar to, I always felt like the German was at least a little bit easy to learn because the sentence structure was kind of similar. Even though the, what is that? You had to have the different suffixes. The sentence structure itself, because it's like the sun or something like that. And okay, you have to figure out what the is in German, but you know, at least the sentence usually seems to go noun, verb, outcome, you know, and that kind of helped out that the sentence structure was kind of similar.
I believe English is a Germanic language, so that makes a certain amount of sense that there would be some similarities there. But I do believe we are going to continue down
Our speech path.
our language road here, and this one's a bit of a mystery in the language realm, would you say, Kevin?
This was one that I'm kind of surprised as much Middle Ages I like to look about when I was into history. I was never all that familiar with the Voynich manuscript, which is a book that has been deemed undecipherable.
Yeah, this one is really, I can't remember how long ago it was that I first heard about this, but it wasn't very long ago. And they had a this book was found, I think surfaced in like 1912 or something in modern times. A Mr. Voynich, I believe, had come across this
Yeah,
manuscript.
1912.
Which he thought, I think, was from the 13th century, but they think it's from the 15th century. Anyway, it's still pretty old. I still say that's a worthy thing to have. No need to quibble. But the really kind of strange thing about it is that it appears to be written in a language that is unknown to anyone. No, not the script and the letters that are actually not in any known letters or writing system either.
Yeah, and the reason that this got brought up is someone got put a theory out recently.
Yes, that's basically, I think it boils down to it being that this was a manual for like women's health.
Nicholas Gibbs published a new article on it, giving his thoughts on what it was. And A, it was nothing that other people hadn't guessed before, which annoyed people.
And I think that some the ideas have been debunked as well, or
He thought that everything was an abbreviation, but all of the abbreviation, you know, someone thought about it before. Like, I mean, it's not that you would think if you're writing in code, an abbreviation would be something that would pop into your mind outside of a regular like cipher setup.
oh yeah. So like the abbreviation idea was that rather than writing out full words, they would just use like the first couple letters, and that's why it looks like gibberish. But that didn't turn out to actually produce any meaningful results either. People were pointing out on the internet. So it seems like this idea had been tried before, and he also had an idea that there's maybe a missing index to explain what the letters meant, but
Because
that seems not very helpful either.
there are evidently missing pages to this book. So it is not complete. But it sounds like they have the majority of it. And it also seems like they kind of have the pieces of the puzzle a little bit set up, because it seems like the book's set up in chapters.
Right.
They kind of bicker over what the titles of the chapters are or what they may be. But everyone seems to agree that there are chapters. So, I mean, you have something to work with, even just from that aspect.
And there's pictures that go along with the text that kind of give people an idea of what the subject matter is.
Yeah, so art always helps kind of direct you somewhat well, I would say.
So I want to say there's seven different chapters, like astrology, you know, plants and herbs, medicine, and let me see, three other ones probably. But like you said, some of the people were...
Well, and that's the other... okay, so they think it popped up around 1404 to 1438 is when this was when this is written. So, I mean, just it's always crazy to me when there's a book, you know, something physical like that, that would be really hard to, I mean, you've got to keep that in the right conditions to get it to last that long.
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't think paper would survive that long. I think, well, who knows? I'm not sure if it was actually paper or not that they used for this book. Could be like vellum or something from back then.
Yeah.
But it is remarkable that something would be around for 600 years.
And still not be deciphered, too. Like, evidently, people have... Well, yeah, since 1912, basically, it sounds like people have been investigating this book, trying to figure out what the hell it actually says. And no one... Because they mentioned a couple of different famous cryptographers. They're like, oh, they dedicated all this time to it. And everyone's like, they came up with shit.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess it's possible that somebody could have just wrote a book of gibberish just as sort of like fake people out. I mean, what would you say the odds are of something like that being what's going on here?
It's possible. I mean, it seems weird no matter what the answer is. Like, how did the... Well, I guess I understand if the key got ripped out of the book.
But then, if it really was supposed to be secret, would you keep the key in the book?
Oh, yeah, that would be kind of stupid, huh?
I think. I mean, maybe there is a key that exists somewhere, though. But could be lost. I mean, like you say, the chances are, by rights, this book should probably be lost. From having stuck around for 600 years. Pretty amazing.
Well, and I think that's the other thing that they mentioned, is that one of the problems is that by the time it first popped up, really, was in the 1600s. When... This is just crazy to me. Holy Roman Emperor Rudolf II. Bought it for 600 gold ducats. I mean, that's wild that something got paid for. Like, they officially know the transaction that happened back in the 1600s.
Yeah, there must have been some kind of record, I guess. Maybe the...
That's crazy.
In the treasury or something.
To track this book.
in case anyone's wondering, that's the equivalent of $90,000 in today's currency. So yeah, he was thinking that it was a 13th century manuscript at that time as well, which I believe the 1400s is actually the 15th century, so that would be a 200 year difference. But
oh, right.
So back when that first was, I mean, that would be the difference between a 300 and a 500-year-old manuscript, I suppose. I'm just thinking of the old Holy Roman Emperor, Rudolf II. If he was thinking it was 200 years older, I don't know. I guess that would make a bigger percentage of, like, age at that point. Now it seems like it's not as big of a deal. Like, give or take 200 years.
Oh.
Like 600 versus 800. Would you be angry if you had bought something that you thought was 800 years old that turned out to be 600 years old?
And not really.
What about if it was 500 and you, or if it was only 300 and you thought it was 500?
200. I can still live with 300 years old, I guess. That's still pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree. I think Rudolph did okay.
Yeah.
Either way, he did pretty good for himself.
But that's the other thing that they kind of mentioned, is that even by that time, the language that this person probably spoke was probably not around in the same fashion.
Oh, the language of the manuscript?
Yeah, the language of the manuscript.
Yeah, I mean, this could just be some, like, simple language that, or I don't know, invented language that was only used within a group of friends or a family. Like, who the heck knows?
Yeah, it could be something like that. But you know, if the manuscript doesn't pop up for a couple of hundred years, and who knows if it was stayed in this one place the whole time or it got moved around. You know, it really could have not been where that language was spoken, really, even at all, when it surfaced.
Yeah, this is true.
So, yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of possibilities that you have no idea what it really could be. Well, and evidently people haven't been able to figure it out. Right. Like, those people that bought it did try to translate it too and did not have any luck either.
And I think what makes me kind of lean towards it not being like a total fraud, just somebody having invented a bunch of gibberish, is that it's like there's also these, you know, drawings and you know, the lettering is well done. So it seems like someone put a lot of time into it. You know, I guess unless someone was just trying to, you know, dupe somebody and make them think it was, I don't know. Because it is an interesting mystery, you know. It would, I think, get people interested in buying it just to try to try to solve it, you know. There is something about it that is like, you know, I could see how it would call to people.
Yeah, I mean, you really want to solve that mystery, man. Who wouldn't want to be the one that cracked that thing?
Right.
Like, I kind of wanted to take a chance at it. Man, I'm like, man, that sounds like fun. You know, I would definitely say that piqued my interest. I'm like, oh, that's pretty wild.
So, any potential con artists out there who are looking to get people to invest in antiquities, try to make it an invented language that you made up that no one has ever seen before. That should, I think, get that value just a little bit higher. One of our services we provide for our listeners.
From us to you.
Yes.
We give back.
Mm-hmm. We don't just report the news. We interpret it into money-making ideas. Just sort of an added value for us.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes it is. More added value for us means more language talk.
Oh, yes. This was one that I guess had wondered if it was only me who ever thought about this, but
well, I read an article similar to this one that you got me from Slate.com, but evidently there is a divide in your welcome for the older generation and no problem.
Yes.
For the younger generation.
Now, yeah,
those damn millennials.
Specifically, we're talking about the thing you say when somebody says to you, thank you. Like, your response, you know, like you said, the more traditional, you're welcome versus no problem. And I can remember, and it's interesting, our mutual friend growing up, or when we were younger, Sam, I can remember talking to him about this very thing and him complaining about it being rude to say no problem because it implies that there could be a problem. And I'm like, well, I guess so. Like, at the time it made sense to me that I think, yeah, I mean, just say you're welcome. Like, that's the thing to say, right?
Yeah, I just kind of laugh because I think I say no problem sometimes.
No, I do too, for sure.
I think I get tired of your welcome all the time.
Yeah, there is something that seems very formal about your welcome. Like,
yeah, if I'm definitely trying to sound more formal, I think I'd bust out of your welcome. But yes. Maybe around the house and no problem.
If you were talking to the queen, you know, and you had just poured her tea.
I'd go with the you're welcome.
Yes.
Yep. With the queen's tea. Yeah.
And she said, thank
pinky,
you. Yeah.
Pinkies in the air.
You wouldn't want to say no problem to her.
No, not to her majesty. That would seem very rude.
She may give you a stern look at that sort of talk.
Speaking of which, the woman in this article, her stern face is hilarious. By the way, it is a terrible stock photo.
There was a few times that I was chuckling during this article, which is one of the reasons that I shared it. Because it takes a comical tone with the issue.
But they do mention that, just like Sam, many people have a problem with no problem because it does. I guess I understand, you know, that it implies that there's a problem because you're using the word problem.
Well, no, it implies that I might have thought there was a problem. Does that make sense?
correct.
Like,
yeah, I got you.
Well, of course there's no problem. Like, I didn't think there was a problem. And I'm frankly offended that you think that I thought there might have been a problem. Or that you think that I should have thought there would be a problem. That's what I think it really is. It's like that you think that they need to tell you that there's not a problem because they're, you know, a reasonable person might have thought there was a problem. Yes.
I guess if people use that on me, no problem, I don't think of it that way.
Right.
Like, 'cause that's the other thing, like, They mention millennials using it more, and I'm like, I know that I've got to be around some. So I've probably heard it, which is probably why I say it somewhat regularly at this point. But I honestly didn't think about it until this article mentioned it.
Yeah, I at some point have chilled out on that whole problem because I found myself using it, like you said. And it's like they point out in this article, I think they summed it up well by saying, like, really, what does your welcome mean? Like, your welcome to what?
What? Yeah. I've always that had crossed my mind. You know, I don't really decipher language all that much, even though I wanted to do that for that manuscript. But
Yeah.
You know.
That's a special case.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't think about the etymology of language sometimes, but.
Yes, that's just a strange idiom. I mean, it seems like the right thing to say, but when you really sit and think about it, you're like, "What? You're welcome. What does that even mean?" And so I guess it starts to lose a little bit legitimacy there as like the clear, correct thing to say.
The go-to.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it's just the go-to because it is the go-to, it doesn't matter if it changes.
And so you may, as the article proposed this, that the you're welcome and no problem are basically exactly the same. And anyone who has a problem with it needs to, like, re-examine their life.
Yeah, I do agree with that sentiment.
And this is from someone who has taken that journey, I guess I'd say, from at one point having cared about this to coming to the point where...
Well, maybe we should get a hold of Sam to find out if he's come around to no problem, just to really cap things off.
That would be interesting to get an update here. So when we get that update, we're going to have to report back. I don't think we can get Sam on the phone right now.
No, we'll worry about that some other time.
Absolutely.
So I guess to wrap things up, we can talk about Bell Time beer for the evening.
Oh, wait, Kevin. I think maybe real quick we can throw in.
Just, what's that?
There's some, I think, recent news that we didn't cover about Columbus being selected to go for the Hyperloop.
Yeah.
Or potentially being one of the 10.
Yeah, the fact that they went, they narrowed down, because we have talked about this before. Obviously. But the Hyperloop going from Pittsburgh to Columbus to Chicago is one of the 10 finalists for the Hyperloop. And yeah, that's pretty cool to still be in the running at that point. Because they've gone through somewhat of a... you know, a process to weed people out.
Well, they started with like 2,000 some routes, I believe, that applied to be looked at to be potential routes for the Hyperloop. And then they came through as one of the 10 strongest. So that's pretty good. That would be the, just to reiterate, I suppose, the Hyperloop is a still, as of yet, not achieved, we should point out, idea of basically using vacuum tunnels to send these train-like things through that would kind of float in the vacuum there on these like hovercraft-like situations. Almost, in I guess, also similar to how at the bank... they use tubes to get the container over to the teller.
Yeah, I loved how they mentioned that. I'm like, I haven't used one of those in I don't know how long.
I did use one the other weekend recently, so that was kind of
that's
always interesting.
I talked to the machine, keep on moving.
Yeah, I forget why I needed to engage the actual human teller for some reason. Always an interesting experience. It does remind me of the Hyperloop whenever that happens. But this would be one of the 10 possible ones. And I guess any other of these seem like interesting routes here?
Well, I did just, it was...
I guess we should say the route. It's actually from Chicago to Columbus to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it's 488 miles. Because there are four in the U.S., Cheyenne to Denver to Pueblo, Miami to Orlando was another one, and Dallas to Houston. I'm not quite sure why San Antonio didn't get thrown in there, man. Make that a three-way, but still, Dallas to Houston is 640 miles, which is a long ass.
Yes, that is the longest route in the U.S., so I can see why they wouldn't maybe want to throw San Antonio a bone. Because that would probably make it even longer, I would have to imagine.
Right.
So the thing that's interesting here is that there's no, like, really large cities there, that like Los Angeles or New York. Oh, Chicago, though. I mean, Chicago's, like, the third biggest city, right? Or
is that... Yeah, Chicago's third largest.
So that is...
I think.
I take that back, then.
Yeah. Because between that one... in India, Mumbai, I believe is, to Chennai. I'm quite sure that Mumbai is extremely large.
Man, Chennai there is getting the love in India. They've also got the, Bengaluru to Chennai, route as well.
Right.
So.
Yeah, a couple in the UK, one in Mexico, two in India. Toronto to Montreal. You know.
Oh, that'd be sweet.
Yeah, we were talking about how, honestly, like, if something like this came true and it was only a half hour to go to Chicago, you could honestly commute to Chicago in the morning.
You get there in half an hour. I mean, there's that is like how far, there's days when it takes me that long to get to work, you know.
Yeah.
Driving. So now you figure you still have to, I guess, factor in your driving time to get to the Hyperloop station.
Right.
Park your car and whatnot. But, you know, still, that's crazy.
Yeah. It's still doable, I think. It would not be out of the pale. And they also said that I think Pittsburgh would only be 20 minutes or something like that. Because right. It would be less time than going to the Columbus to Chicago leg is the long leg.
Right. Yeah, that's the longer part, but yeah, that'd be nuts to be able to get to Pittsburgh in 20 minutes.
Right. I was like, oh my lord, that would be so nice.
You could see some more Penguins games, probably.
Yeah, well, I actually joked about this topic, we went to go see my brother the last time around. It's like, oh man, that'd be nice. We could just hop on the Hyperloop and pop on over here in like 20 minutes.
That would be wild.
You know, to see him and his family, like that would be pretty rocking.
So yeah, obviously, like we said, I mean, this is still an unbuilt technology, so not like it's for sure going to happen, but. Still something interesting and exciting, I think, that that route was chosen as one of the 10 most likely here.
Yeah, that's pretty badass. So I hope it comes true. Like, I think we've demonstrated with our number of high-tech topics that anything cool and next generation technology,
Yeah,
I'm all over.
And hopefully it's going to be a little bit more humane than traveling by air, which it's just as like a terrible experience for everybody. I'm hoping that they
well, it doesn't... The short travel time certainly would help.
Yeah, that would help. And then it doesn't you know, help that it's like so energy intensive to like send things flying up through the air and, you know, powered the whole time.
Yeah, gravity is a bit of a bitch.
Yeah.
And you've got to overcome that to fly. So there's a lot of energy expended just trying to get into the air.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that this is going to be a win-win in terms of being faster and more energy efficient and more friendly for the environment. So... very exciting. Hopefully it works. We'll keep you informed.
Yeah.
And I believe you were going to talk about the fine beverage we were drinking this evening, Kevin.
Yeah, it was the last 22 of the pepper porter, the English porter that I made with vanilla. It was still a little short on the vanilla. Should have let it soak in there a little bit longer. In the 2 week time frame that I did, my mistake, learn from it, move forward.
Well, I think that's wonderful that you're taking accountability, although I will say that I did quite enjoy it, even though the vanilla was not
is prominent.
As strong as you would have liked, but I would still call it a good beer.
Yep, that's what I'm aiming for. And yeah, Belgian Double. If you have a wrestling name that you think should go with it, go ahead and hit me up. Because we already did the socials earlier. So I will say we are out.
Bye.